The other three couples I don't remember, except that the women were typically Ab, which is to say, peaches. There were no servants at all. We helped ourselves to the tej from flagons on the sideboard and stood about gossiping for all the world like a Belgravia bun fight. Fazel and his juniors talked shop, as soldiers always do, and showed a surprising knowledge of such diverse matters as the Sepoy Mutiny and the war in America. But presently they were set aside by Fazel's Black Venus and the Handmaidens, and blowed if I wasn't cross-examined about London fashions, hairstyles and the like. Some of their inquiries would have made me blush if I hadn't been revelling in the attentions of three such ravishing inquisitors, bright-eyed, flirtatious, breathing perfume with each gentle laugh. It struck me that Mastiat must be uncommon tolerant to allow herself to be so outshone. And then I remembered reading somewhere that our old Queen Bess had surrounded herself with the prettiest of pippins, no doubt knowing that there was only one woman who'd be looked at. That was certainly the case when the Queen of Gala made her entrance, stately and smiling sleepily, and somehow contriving to put all the bowing beauties in the shade. And damn it, she wasn't even sober yet, to judge from her swaying gait, careless gestures and ringing laugh. They'd put her in very fair trim, though, with a gold circlet as a sort of coronet and gold thread cunningly worked into her braids. She had gold chain earrings depending to her broad, bare shoulders, and a gold collar clasped about her throat. Her dress was white and of some clinging gauzy stuff, cleverly cut to disguise a waist and hips which were undoubtedly overblown, and to display a bosom whose development matched her shoulders admirably. She carried a gold wand this time, and the effect of her carriage and manner was overpowering. No other word for it. When the company had finished its obeisance, she held her arm for me to take and led the way to the head of the table, where she took her seat among the cushions, indicating that I should join her. She reclined on one elbow, but I decided to sit, as being less awkward and more in keeping with the company, who had their little stools. More tej was poured. Mastiat led the company in pledging me, Queen Victoria, Napier, and the British Army, in that order, each toast requiring a full goblet. No heel taps. We ain't going to eat a great deal, thinks I. They'll be too tight to pick up the grub. But I was dead wrong. You know what dining out I'd done thus far. Rough browsing, mostly, and not too formal, even at Ullaba's Citadel and the monastery. But I'd never been to a Lord Mayor's banquet, if you know what I mean. And that was what I was treated to, Habesh style. It's quite alarming. You sit there, drinking toasts, wondering when the soup's going to arrive, when suddenly the most appalling din breaks out just beyond the door, a full-throated bellowing, peal after peal of some huge body in mortal pain, thrashing about to the accompaniment of yelling voices, shrieks of command and cries of desperation, furniture crashing, the bellowing rising to a crescendo, and the guests applauding, and your hostess imbibing another pint of tej, smacking her lips in anticipation. And then servants scurry in, and there is planked down in front of you a plate containing a 12-pound beefsteak, raw, red, and bleeding. And, as I live and breathe, it has steam rising from it, which perhaps ain't surprising since 30 seconds before it was part of the living animal which is bawling in agony outside. I'd had raw beef before, in transparently thin slices, cold and not too bad. But as I gazed at this smoking horror, I thought, no, the devil with etiquette, protocol and diplomatic niceties, I ain't touching it, whatever offence I give. Down the table they were buffing in like mad cannibals, even those elegant beauties with gore trickling down their lovely chins and being wiped with dainty fingers. I daren't look at Mastiat for fear of what I'd see. The mere sound of her champing made me come all over faint.
"You do not care for the Brundo,"
she laughed, took a hearty draught of tej and called a servant to remove my bloody lump of carcass and replace it with a whole roast chicken.
"Our friend Speedy, the great Basha Valaka, shuddered like a girl when the beast was tethered and carved. That is why it was done outside today, so that your delicate senses might not be disturbed."
She struck me lightly on the arm, joshing, so I had to look at her. But either she wiped herself or swallowed the steak whole, for the chubby laughing face was clean and shining.
So, eat with good appetite.
I can't say I did, for the beast was still bellowing piteously outside, and